thanks once again for downloading and listening to a podcast from Celtic Underground. We are in the 21st year and the 20th season of the world's longest running football fans podcast. You can subscribe by going to thecelticunderground.substack.com and you will get correspondence, articles, emails straight to your inbox. You can pay a little bit of money and you will get exclusive content straight to your inbox. And if you go online and look on our website, you can still, you don't need to be on the Substack app, you can get all the podcasts on your usual provider. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying enjoy the latest podcast.
Misery loves company. That's what the wise man said.
Hello and welcome to the Celtic Underground. And this week I am joined, as I seem to be joined by most weeks these days, by Andrew Smith. How are you doing, Andrew?
No bad, you know, I was thinking we could call this it's the Harry H show, right? See, can we get somebody in the Celtic Underground Corbett so we can have Harry H Corbett? You zitsy, zitsy man.
One for the kids.
Oh, I'll tell you. See, when you think about it, that was genius. Tiptoe and Son was genius. It was Beckett. It was Beckett in a sitcom form. It's Waiting for Godot, isn't it? So much it was just a two-hander.
Yeah,
it's just genius.
But the thing about it is, how many people listening to this will actually remember the Rag and Bone Man coming round there?
I do.
I remember him coming horse and cart.
You had to give him about two, well, we didn't have bin bags then, but it would be two bags or whatever, paper bags of clothes, and it would, all I would get was a balloon. Do you remember they used to give the Wayne's balloons?
I don't even remember what they gave. I do remember down at my granddad's, there was a guy, and he used to give paper.
Fair enough. Very useful. I don't know if I'm making this up now, but I think the balloons were even in a kind of stick. You know, sometimes they blew them up and you had them in a wee stick.
I honestly, all I can have is the vaguest memory of the cart and horse, and that's it.
Yeah. And then it was a potato man followed that up, and then it was like Bonacord. Remember, you get the Bonacord, like ginger.
Yeah.
Alpine and Bonacord. I don't know if they were great rivals or something. You know, they were Pepsi and Coca-Cola of the west of Scotland.
And if you ever bought their Coke, it was amazing. They'd obviously were a million miles away from guessing the Coca-Cola secret recipe. Salt-right cola tasted nothing like it.
Just feel your teeth disintegrating, but no one ever got all these fillings.
Do you know, I say that, I don't know, anytime I'll say I'm just a child of the 70s. I remember my dad used to go away for work and would come back. You know, you would get sugar cubes, like in perfect squares. Yeah. And he would bring those back as like a sweet. And me and my brothers, that was the treat. He'd been away, he'd stayed at some hotel somewhere and would come back with the, you know, the wee pack, there'd be two lumps in it. And you would just open it and eat it like a sweetie.
My mum used to make us pieces, you know what I mean? It was like a thick slice of butter. And then on top of it was sugar. That was the piece. It was a layer of butter, then a layer of sugar. It's like, I'll tell you, every parent from the 70s should be like
a... I know. Do you know, I read a thing once, it was a good sort of 7-8 years ago, and it was a, what was the worst decade to be a child since the war in terms of your chances of being seriously injured or killed or whatever? And it was the 70s. The 70s was the worst decade to be a child between the war. And it was basically because what started to happen is technology had started to rapidly advance. Cars could go, more people had cars.
More affordable cars.
Yeah, and all that stuff. But the safety, the health and safety elements of stuff hadn't kicked in.
Lagged behind.
Yes. So we had still lead in the petrol that did away with. And, you know, all these types of things. And obviously all the abuse scandals and TV personalities all stemmed back to the 70s. It was all stuff that people did in the 70s.
Dad, but we never found out about them in the 2000s.
I know. Yeah. Because the attitude was, God, there was a programme I watched. I think I said before, they tend to be on BBC 4 now, but it's like BBC 2 used to do these series of programmes about things. I remember that it was a documentary all about things that occurred on mainstream prime time before the watershed television.
Well, I think that was that Channel 4 or Channel 5? It happened in the 70s or something.
Channel 5 does that, but it was a more serious one. And obviously the most obvious one was black and white minstrels happening.
Yeah.
And various blacked up things. But there was other stuff about sexual references. I remember there was one, and it said, this was shown at 7 o'clock. And it was some woman doing an ironing, and the guy's talking about his granddaughter, who was like 15. And he's making reference to her not wearing a bra and stuff like that. And she's like, oh, Dad, come on. And you're watching just thinking, because it was like doctored about the house and things like that. Where they're talking about having one of them, they're drawing the straws to go out. But it was like the short straw didn't go out to some all-girls school to do medical inspections and stuff. Honestly. It is amazing that any of us of our age have come out like well-adjusted humans. Well, exactly. Exactly.
There's a lot of people watch these shows that...
Yeah.
There's a few people watch these shows that don't think that.
Yeah. I suppose that's why Farage is getting so many votes. It's all people of our age watching those programmes. You think, what's wrong with that?
He is a bit my age. Is he not? He's not. He is. I think he is.
No, he's not. No, he's... again, he's like... It's like my obsession with... He reminds me of my obsession with looking at pictures of footballers from the 70s and then checking what age the guy was, and he's like 23.
I know, he looks a bit 40.
He's got like sideburns down here, no teeth, like wrinkles everywhere. Yeah, yeah, it looks like he smokes about 50 a day, you know, that type of...
Probably did.
Probably
my
did.
My dad smoked 40 a day, just his nerves. Then I used to see Henrik smoke. I remember the night Celtic won the League Cup and they were all smoking, all the Scandinavians were smoking. You could smoke inside then, so it was in the corner of the Jockstein Lounge, I suppose. We went back for the celebrations and they were all smoking. It was quite a... It even took you back then. I mean, I was smoking then and such like, but you didn't expect it from an athlete, such a finely tuned athlete, but he was just a natural athlete.
Remember one of the first times that I've been taken aback, one of my mates that I went to school with. So you were sort of semi-aware of his diet, but it wasn't as obvious at school, actually. And was sort of under 18 for Scotland. Level, did his cruciate ligament in, so never made it. Round about sort of 17, we all going out. He had the least healthy diet of everybody yet. I mean, he was a good athlete and stuff. Remember him having pie, beans and chips when we went out and thinking, hey, Michael, shouldn't you be having something a bit better than that?
I went to see Saipan last Friday and Wee Stevie had recommended it. Sorry, uh-huh. St. Anthony on here, whatever people know him. And he was dead right. I thought it was a really enjoyable watch. I mean, I know people have claimed certain things didn't happen a lot, but you don't expect verisimilitude. Is that the word? Verisimilitude in these things. You're going to take some artistic license. And it made McCarthy a wee bit more bumbling than McCarthy was.
Guy Ronnie, but, who goes next to me at Celtic Park, he said it made McCarthy look a bit bumbling, bit of a bumbling fool.
Bit more. But it was still sympathetic towards him. He was in an impossible situation. Keane got himself in an impossible situation because of the way he was. But when I was sitting watching it, and the guy who plays Keane is really good, actually. He's really good. But remember Keane writing his biography about John Hartson eating crisps, like the day when they come back after losing 2-0 to Clyde. And he was looking up the back of the bus and Hartson was eating a big bag of crisps. And he's thinking, where the fuck have I got myself into here?
So, did I say this before? I don't know if I said it on here, but back in the day, I was friendly with Adam Virgo when he was at Celtic. And
you did? Yeah, that was last week.
And I remember one of the other things was Adam Virgo saying that they would, you know, because they would stay at the Hilton. There was a private function room that Celtic would eat in. They would stay at the Hilton before the game, private function room, and then they would go up to their rooms and then go off to the game. And Adam was about to leave the function room, and Keane's like, I'll not do the voice. Where are you going? And Adam's saying, you know, he's quite intimidating.
Yeah.
I'm just going up to my room. What are you doing that for? You're going to go up there, sit on your own, play the PlayStation, watch whatever subscription channels you can because you're on your own. Stay here. Stay in here with your teammates. Get to know them as people. See if you get to know your teammates as people. You play better with them on the pitch. And I thought that was...
Yeah.
That was good sort of team bonding stuff, that you should get to know your teammates as people and not just eat a meal and then go up to the room. He did, yeah, well, he did exactly what Roy Keane told him, by the way.
As you would. As you would. As you would. But oh, for a Roy Keane now. Although Roy Keane, he admitted himself that he was pretty much done when he got here. Amazing, he only played 13 games. His game at Ibrox, mind you, his best game. Absolutely bossed it at Ibrox, remember?
Yeah, because he obviously decided, if I'm going to have one game, because he knew he was finished, he must have decided, I can play through this pain. And probably an 80% Roy Keane is better than everybody else on that pitch that day.
I could be doing them for 2 weekends next month.
Yeah, well, talking of midfielders that we do or don't have, so the game on Saturday night, we'll talk about the boycott in a minute, but the game itself, what did you think about the game?
I was really disappointed again. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I'm no blaming anybody because it ties in with what you're just prefacing it with there. I remember being at Celtic in the 90s and seeing how joyless it became for the players because they thought, you know, whatever we do, we can't really change how the supporters feel about this club because there's something more deep-seated at work here. So it becomes more difficult to... Of course, you can spread certain joy, but there's something buzzing around the club that you can't resolve by winning games, winning football games. Of course, I suppose if Celtic won the double and they got to the semi-finals of the Europa League, people would be happy, but it's not going to go away. What's the chant they hear most? It's sack the board. That's the chant that's been sung. Martin O'Neill and sack the board. Mm-hmm. They're the two chants that we've heard more often. And I remember when Brady took over and I said to him, by the way, you're in a hiding to nothing here. I said, you can't succeed until the situation in the boardroom is resolved. He said, that's rubbish. He said, that's rubbish. He said, if you get the right players, do this, da-da-da-da. And then I remember just before he left, he said, by the way, he said, you were right about that. He said, until all the ownership questions are resolved, until it's sorted out, there's going to be something hanging over. There's a pall that hangs over the club. We've seen it before, and it's hanging over it now. Blame the board for that, because it shouldn't have happened. So before anybody's going to start pointing fingers at me, the root of the genesis of this is the way that the club's been run over the past 2 years, or the failings, the consistent failings to apply good governance in so many situations. That's what's precipitated this. But now, to me, as a support, we're thinking ourselves ill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for us. I've said it before, it's felt joyless. Although it didn't feel joyless, I have to say, it didn't feel joyless in that 96 minute. It's a long time since I've hugged my boy as vehemently. Him, and the whole family. I mean, it was like, you live for moments like that.
Yeah.
You do live for moments like that. Because I said to him, son, this is never happening. And it didn't look like it was ever going to happen, did it?
No, particularly when there was a couple of things that made it look like it was not happening. One was, I didn't realise it was Douglas Ross that was running the line below me in the North Stand. When he suddenly...
Manjaro injections are working.
He suddenly becomes Mr. Pedantic. And he only starts becoming Mr. Pedantic about your moving millimetres.
No.
For corners and throw-ins. He only starts doing that in the last 10 minutes. And the thing that got me was my brother turned to me and said, it's 25 minutes to go at one point. And nothing's happening here. And then what felt like about 30 seconds later, I said to him, it's now only 20 minutes to go and nothing's happened in the 5 minutes since you said there's 25 minutes to go. I mean, it was one of those games where genuinely nothing had happened.
Nothing happened,
they did a brilliant job. I said this in the monopod. Whilst it riled me massively. They're only doing it because they're allowed to do it. They did a brilliant job of wasting time in that game. I'd love to know how much the ball was in play.
Yeah, there was, you know how, there was one time over at the stand side where we are, the main stand side. So the ball goes out and so the guy goes to get the ball that's on the wee cone thing, the wee kind of disc. But as he's doing it, the ball bounces off the trackside advertising and bounces back into his feet, right? And he throws that ball away and carries on walking to get the one. Like, you know, it's like, it's not like tennis with it. You know what I mean? They're, oh, no, 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 that ball's better.
That's remember what I said. This isn't the Wimbledon where you get to pick which ball the ball boy's giving you.
No, it was ludicrous. The referee had no control. The referee had absolutely no control.
He was truly awful. I mean, like, really awful.
I felt for him because I thought, he's out his depth. He can almost feel he's out his depth. I've been there sometimes, you know, in your life, where you think, I'm no up to this.
And I mean, he's obviously, one of the things that frustrates me is where Scottish refs stand when we're attacking.
I heard you on the monopod, yeah, but closing the space.
But he did. Yeah. Like, he stood. Now, this is, I suppose, if you're paranoid, it's deliberate. And if you're not, it shows his inexperience. He continually stood where we needed. We've got two options, go down the line or cut back across, and he's there. So the players aren't running into him because the players are just not picking that route because he's closed down that space and stopped anything happening. If you're experienced and you understand what's happening in the game, you then start to think, well, I know I'm supposed to stand here because that's what I've been trained to do. But in this game environment, I need to be maybe taking three steps back here and a wee bit over. Because I'm in the way, and I think you would have to play him that game back and pause it and continually say, you do know you were in the way there. You were in the way. You were in the way. And you'd probably say that maybe only 752,342 times in the game. He was absolutely awful.
Yeah, do you remember that game? Wasn't that long ago? Was it Don Robertson or was it... The ball hit him about four times. He had to stop playing four times because he kept being in the wrong position. And wasn't that long ago at Celtic Park? And he kept having to do, a drop ball.
They all stand in roughly the same spot. So that's obviously where...
There's a diagonal. You're supposed to go across a diagonal.
Yeah, so they're obviously told to be there. But if you... The nature of Scottish football, the teams just sit massively in at Celtic Park. I don't know about other games, so I can't comment. But certainly know at Celtic Park how much teams sit in. That when we're attacking, that is right where we would have two options, down the line or across, exactly where the referee is standing.
But it's like my boy said, but as you say, these are the two areas that Celtic will try attacking. Yeah, and maybe that's why they've become such a... My boy said to me, he said, we're such an easy team to play against. Where is the dynamism? I don't know, it just feels like a team that's beaten down by this season.
I think it's compounded by our midfield issue. Hitati, for whatever reason, is gone. Bernardo was never there. McCowan comes on and is okay in bits and spurts, but his biggest challenge is he's not got pace and he's a very good Dundee player. So he can't play for the... He can't start him. We've discussed Negrin. He scores goals, but is anonymous the rest of the time. Some people may criticise Engels. I'm not as critical. Because the midfield just works better when it's Engels and McGregor. And that's why I'm really hopeful that if Oxlade-Chamberlain works, you actually suddenly have three midfielders for the first time this season who participate for 90 minutes.
That's your midfield for those two games. Obviously, he's no... For the Stuttgart games, he's no eligible anyway, Oxlade-Chamberlain. But you would like to think that could be your midfield for Ibrox.
Yeah. And then you can bring Negrin on as a sub. And I think that's where he would prosper most. When teams have got stretched and the spaces are occurring. But, and it's not having to go. It's just, for me, it's a statement of fact. He is anonymous. He is not participating in the midfield as we need a midfielder to participate in the midfield. That's probably the best way to put it without sounding so having a go. Because I know people get very agitated about me having a go at him all the time.
No, he just doesn't. He's almost like if you play that central midfield three, he almost needs to play in a 3-5-2.
Yes.
But he can't play in the way that Celtic are playing, this 4-3-3 or whatever.
Because it really is, it's turning in a three-man midfield into a two-man midfield. And then if Hitati's in the game, I mean, that was the problem under Rodgers. Rodgers was, and understand why, Rodgers had no goals on the right wing, no goals in the striker position, and no goals in the left wing. So he had no goals in the front three. So he's trying to play the two midfielders who offer him the biggest goal threat, and that's Hitati and Nigerin in the team. But McGregor, Hitati and Nigerin is not a functioning midfield, as we've seen too many times this season.
Yeah, I mean, I know it is a big problem, but I'm looking for dynamism even beyond that. Like, it's a team that it seems to be kind of playing with a weight in its shoulders. And there's all sorts of reasons for that. I mean, they've lost six league games, right? Which is very unusual for a Celtic team to be at this stage of the season. They've lost six league games. So they're a team that lose. Then, I mean, Celtic had only lost three league games in the COVID season at this point. Team's lost twice as many league games.
They are winning under Martin O'Neill. So I'm not watching Rangers every week. I'm not watching Rangers at all, really, actually. May is a Rangers fan. Continually messages me and say you'd lose the will to live watching this. It's awful. It's rubbish. It's dire.
They get booed off last. I mean, they're against a 10-man command. They get booed off. I mean, my God, Queen's Park just collapsed. They just capitulated.
Well, I didn't watch it.
5 of the 8 goals came from set pieces.
But I know someone who was there who doesn't support either Kilmarnock or Rangers. And they said that up until about the last 10 minutes, could have gone. You wouldn't have known Kilmarnock had 10 men. Could have gone either way. That Rangers were
exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's
so. But what Danny Rowe appears to have done is made them functional, and I think to a lesser, a greater extent, that's what Martin O'Neill's done with Celtic. He's made us functional to get through this season. When we've not got the ball, we're playing with two banks of four. The two wingers drop back and sit with the two midfielders. Nigerin then pushes up and closes down with whoever's playing up front.
Hitati used to do that, but didn't he? Hitati used to do that.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is, I think that's what Martin's done. The most important thing is they're going to make this team functional to get through the season. Same thing that Danny Rowe has done with Rangers. I'm going to make this team functional.
How often do you see, and maybe it's easier when you're the kind of underdog, but how often have we seen it this season where you've watched Celtic and you think the opposition looked better coached? I thought that was the case again on Saturday night. I hate to say it. Pains me to say it, but and I've seen it so often.
But I think it all comes from the midfield being completely unfunctioning. I've thought all season, at the beginning of the season, I thought the biggest problem was the lack of goals in the front three meant that when the midfield had the ball,
yeah,
there was no way for them to play it, and so they were all playing it sideways and whatever. And now that we have a bit more spark up front, the issue is, you can see actually the issues, the midfield doesn't function.
I see people were talking about, why doesn't he try on Wednesday night, why not try Chavanchara? By the way, you were like, you were nowhere, you weren't within the same continent. In your monopod the other night, or your Chavanchara. I thought, how often was I trying to say to him, Chavanchara?
But because I hear different people in the media pronouncing it differently, so every time I'm about to say it, I get thrown.
Remember, I was telling you, it's like you're the runway, you just have to build yourself up to it. But I got it from the Celtic TV interview with him. How do you pronounce your name? Jerry McCulloch asked him. And I watched it, and I replayed it.
So pronounce it again.
Chavanchara.
Chavanchara.
Once actually you get that one, it's actually
Chavanchara. Cece.
Arojo. Arojo. I'm still struggling with that. I've got a mental block on that one.
Who was it? Rob McLean. My brother was telling me that Rob McLean on Radio Scotland said that something like Araujo. And my brother's like, who? Is this another new saying?
But poor Mavuka, the stick that. Fella's taken for 45 minutes. What's happened to us?
It's just this thing. Everybody's got to be able to have pronounced on social media so at some point in the future they can go back and go, see, I told you right at the beginning because I'm a genius and I can spot it straight away.
I'm reserving my judgment.
I reserve my judgment. I mean, I didn't reserve my judgment over Shin Yamada because it was instant. You could see it. To be fair, as I said last week, I was a bit biased because I've been given some inside input by somebody who's now building sandcastles in Saudi Arabia, but of what was happening in training. Wow. But no, I was a bit biased there. But even then, I still saw a guy who's running around like my dog chases a ball when it goes to the field.
Was it Yamada or was it Inamura? One of them was quite honest when he took up the
lead. Inamura.
Was it Inamura?
Yeah.
You know, the level there, he said, you know, I think I could have got there. He acknowledged himself he wasn't at that. He wasn't at the level. He said, did surprise me.
So then how can that, the difficulty of getting there, how do you think those teammates are to a guy who has to walk off the training pitch?
No, it's no good. My worry
are they,
is...
They're not going to go, oh, poor guy, I'm sure he'll get there. You know them better than me, footballers, something like that.
Oh, no.
Oh, they'd be like, fuck's sake.
Yeah. They clearly were. They clearly were.
So let's get back to the Dundee game.
But it's all irrelevant.
It wasn't coming. And actually, the biggest thing when I thought we'd blown it was in the 95th, because you're watching it and we're discussing how much injury time. And I had like a sad man from the first minute. Because I remembered last season Dundee playing with this keeper in particular. Because I remember Tony Docherty throwing his hands up in the air. Because the keeper just kept punting it up the pitch, this Peacher. He did a Peter McCloy kick in the second half. Where
the Girvan Lighthouse.
And it went all the way through to Sinisalo. One bounce and it landed at Sinisalo, right? And he kept doing it. So I remembered him from last year. So from goal kick number one, I looked at the clock, and not from the ball going off the park, from him having the ball in his hands and under control, every single time was 30 seconds. Every time. Because I remember telling my brother after seven, or just seven, and going, fuck's sake, man. That's like 3.5 minutes that they've already managed to take out of this game, just from goal kicks. And then halfway through the second half, the referee spoke to him, and I started then timing him. And he took it down to 20 seconds. He's obviously watching the clock. He took it down to 20 seconds, a goal kick. But they must have had like, it felt like he was kicking the ball every minute. And so we were discussing how much injury time, and really should be about 6 or 7, because they've managed to waste it away. And then bang, Tierney gets his face kicked. And I look up at the clock and it's 88-12 or something like that.
It was, aye.
And...
But they put Tierney was still down when they held up the 5 minutes.
Five.
They hadn't added. Tierney was down. Was it 1:29 or something?
Well, he was down at 88-12, and they kicked. And because obviously you're desperate at that point. I looked up at the clock. It was 91:14 or something. It was exactly 3 minutes that Tierney was down.
Was it right?
From what I looked at, or maybe it was 89. No, I think it was 89-12, and then it was 91. So it was 2 minutes. Exactly 2 minutes. Give or take a second or two over, that he was down. So we're debating, right, is the 5 minutes from the point they kick off, or is the 5 minutes from the 90, and then he's still got 2 minutes to add on to that? So we were, you know, but about 95 minutes, the ball goes to Scales. And, you know, I've said this on here before, Scales can defend the ball, clear the ball. Under no circumstances should anybody give Scales more than 90 seconds with the ball. Because he has no idea what to do. I mean, at kickoff in the second half, he demonstrated that. Ball gets played back to him. And without even looking, he places it to Trusty, but there's a Dundee player there. And he's at the edge of their box on the corner. 95 and a bit minutes of 95 minutes injury time. And Scale goes, I think I'll just play it right the way back here. Yeah, poor guy in front of me. Who... At Rebel Rebel on Twitter claims it was him in a different seat to normal. Poor guy in front of me. Almost I'm climbing over him to want to kill Scales at that point. Because I think that's it. We are not going to get to circulate the ball again on that.
I mean, it was 95-57. I genuinely have no understanding about why there's a furore about this.
I don't understand either.
It was 50-odd seconds. And as you say, the game didn't restart to 91 minutes. I actually thought it was nearer 98 minutes. I don't know why I thought it was nearer 98 when they scored. Just that's what's happening, how you feel, isn't it? It's going on and on. Yeah, and it's never happening. 50-odd seconds. Two were lost even before you got to the added time. This didn't make it. It just genuinely doesn't make any sense to me. It's just having a kind of controversy, confecting a controversy for the sake of confecting a controversy.
Right. But nobody's making a point of, he managed to find 2.5 minutes out of 15 that were wasted in the last period of extra time. They managed to have two attacks after 120 minutes. A corner and a free kick. Ball's cleared. Then a corner. And the corner's cleared. Yeah. I mean, they managed to have two inside, as I say. And nobody's mentioning that.
It was almost 3 minutes. So he played almost a fifth extra of that. Yeah,
the 20% of the last period of extra time. Of wasted time. No, I don't think anyone made a substitution in that bit, because we'd made our substitutions, you know, the extra time substitution that you get. Had we not made that in the first period of extra time anyway?
I think so, yeah, they did, because I think Araujo was he thinking that his legs were kind of giving out on him a wee bit.
I mean, we made 7 substitutions in the game.
That must be the first time ever Celtic have... That's what I said to my brother. I said, this is like those rugby games, you know, they just seem to be, it's a procession of players going on and off.
I mean, it was only, although, did somebody get substituted? Did a substitute get substituted? I'm trying to remember now.
No, a substitute didn't get substituted. We worked it
out. So there's only 4 players. So McGregor, Sinisalo, Trusty and Scales.
Yeah.
Is that the 4?
4 at the start. So there's only 3 the outfield players remained.
Yeah.
McGregor. I mean, I don't know. He must play all these games because I remember Brendan Rodgers talked about this. He said, no, some players are better just keeping a rhythm. That's why he must play all the time. You think he played Talbot and such, like, you know, like there must be a reason why he keeps playing.
I'm sure at his age and as a club captain, I'm sure nobody in the coaching staff would think any different if he said, I think it'd be better for my body if I sit out this game.
No, they would actually applaud him.
Yeah. So he must want to play.
Well, he definitely wants to play. But I don't know if it's doing him or Celtic any favours. This is the other thing about Oxlade-Chamberlain. I was looking up in Transfer Market. He's played a fair old number of recent appearances have been at defensive midfielder. Whether or not you play him there, and then you push McGregor further forward.
Yeah.
But does McGregor get the legs for that now? I actually think he still would have. Remember, what was it, the Falkirk game when he was out on the left?
Yep.
And he heard forward, and it was like he created that goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Just by that forward movement, that little burst, the forward burst.
So
there's been nobody who could play where he plays. That's the problem. Nobody could.
Yeah.
Martorelli did it for a bit, I remember. I remember talking to Matt Riley about it, said how much he enjoyed it, because if you remember, McGregor was out with that must have been maybe McGregor. No, because he was back within 10 days of his broken jaw, but was there another time he was out and O'Reilly played?
I can imagine if you're that type of player, you would actually quite enjoy at Celtic being in that position where you're getting more of the ball than anyone else, because the centre-half's all past you. You know, they want to get the ball to you, and then you're pinging the passes and controlling the game.
Is he really pinging the passes? It just knocks it back to... I mean, it does seem that there's been a reversion to not the worst, not the best, the kind of brodge ball, but the more exasperating elements. They've returned to the kind of the default setting.
To be fair, got to see how the new people settle in.
Yeah, I mean, and what a touch for Adamu. Because I said, I thought it just hit off him, because obviously you just see it with the
name. Sure did I, yeah.
And I said to my boy, get lucky there, he said, no, he meant that. You see footballs, and then I said, my boy was right. He well and truly meant that kind of sweep, you're almost sweeping it one leg across the other, aren't you?
Yeah.
And it was very clever for Araujo, because then I thought, this will get, because
I thought VAR would take this off.
He'd followed it in, but he jumped over the ball.
Yeah. Although I say, having watched it back, he was onside. Because he makes a run.
Aroma, was he onside?
He was onside. He ran. Because actually, Tunecki's gone down and the Dundee players followed him down. And Arohi's back at the back post running in.
Right.
So when the ball's played across, as it's flicked by Adamu, the guy who's gone with Tunecki, he's still down towards the goal, the goal line. So Arohi coming in.
And the guy's there.
Because I checked it injecting and thought, you know, what would have happened if he touched it?
Only like to test it.
No, certainly the way that the fourth officials. Right. This is my theory on, in general, I think our officials are not cheats. In fact, I don't think any of them are intentional cheats. I've said before, there was a podcast Against the Rules, and the first season of it, they're talking about in basketball, that the NBA ref said that they didn't have a bias. But they did some analysis, and they did. They had biases, and it manifested itself. So one of the things that I have long since said takes place at Celtic Park, there was sympathy refereeing. So if a team is away from home and well behind in the final quarter, they would get more decisions in their favour, or decisions that should go against them weren't given. And it's a theory I've long had at Celtic Park that when, you know, if Livingston on Wednesday night are 3-0 down after 30 minutes, and a Livingston player halves a Celtic player, he will not get sent off when he should do.
Yeah.
Because sympathy refereeing kicks in, because they're already 3-0 down.
I can see that.
So they talk about sympathy refereeing, and then it was actually to do with racism in basketball. And it was both ways. What they found was, because it was the equivalent of VAR and the officials, and what they found is, if the majority of the colour of the officials matched one of the teams, that team got more decisions in favour. So if the team was mainly black and it was mainly black officials against a team that had more white players in it, the black team got more decisions, and vice versa. If it was a team of mainly white officials and there was one team that had more white players in it, they got slightly more decisions.
Although they don't really exist now, do they?
No.
White men can't jump.
It's the Boston Celtics from when, you know, like 40 years ago. Well,
Big Bird or whatever his name was.
So I think a lot of that with our officials is there's an unconscious bias in some of them. And again, that also stems from, I worked with a guy who was a linesman at Premier League level. And he said, I mean, this is 30 years ago, so you're partly to blame in what he said, Andrew. Because he said, and I remember him telling me, they were discussing it one night, the sort of, there was the elite guys, the equivalent today of the John Beatons. They went away and trained on their own, right?
Yeah, they used to go to Spain and all that.
Masses. The guy who refereed our game on Sunday and the guys who run the line, they all trained together. And he said, we had a conversation once where we all agreed, and obviously this is before VAR, that we hesitated more over a decision that negatively impacted Rangers because it would be in the press for a week to 10 days thereafter. We all agreed this. So what that marginal hesitation does, if the play's moved on, is you then just let the play go. Because a second in football can be a long time in terms of the ball having moved away from the incident. He said it wasn't an intentional decision to favour Rangers, but we all agreed that we just hesitated more in games that impact. Because I was talking to him about how teams who are nowhere near going for the title can get... So they're not in the box as much as Celtic or Rangers because they're not scoring as many goals, can get more penalties for them in a season. And he said, because there's no pressure on you refereeing a... I can't remember what teams, but it would be the equivalent of... There's no pressure on you refereeing
a Dundee Falkirk
game.
The most penalties.
There's no pressure.
Livingston was a couple of years ago. It was Livingston.
Him saying, so if it was Dundee, if Dundee and Falkirk were in the league back then, him saying to me, there's no pressure refereeing a Dundee Falkirk game. And if you make a decision that's not great, it might get shown on Sports Scene, but they'll move on. And it won't be in the press apart from the local Dundee Courier or whatever. It's nowhere. So there's no pressure on you. So you can referee more freely and you tend to make what you think are fairer decisions in those games. And then he said, and we all agreed in it. So I do think there's an element of that.
But yeah, that's when you're second guessing yourself and that's where you can make mistakes.
But my issue specifically with VAR's Andrew Dallas, he would have been a young lad when the nine in a row season game happened, where Hugh Dallas got struck in the head and split his head open, and he's, you know, the family had to move out of the house for a period of time because it was getting...
That's right.
Right?
Did he not get his windows panned in or something?
His windows were panned, there was graffiti and all that stuff. I would find Andrew Dallas a really strange individual if he didn't hate Celtic fans. I would actually think him not hating Celtic fans would make him a weirdo. That's my theory. I can't think of any young lad growing up who sees their dad going through that at the hands of Celtic supporters, whether they were right or wrong, just sees their dad going through that and doesn't have a negative opinion of the supporters of that club.
He's quite an odd individual anyway. I've met him a few times, but not quite a pleasant fella.
I'm sure he is.
And his dad, I was at Scotland Sunday when we serialised his dad's book. Serialised his dad's career, and I said, are we giving 3 weeks to this? It was mind-numbing. It was absolutely... Never mind anything else what my personal thoughts were of Hugh Dallas. This was just mind-numbing copy. Me and my pal Kalina, you know, it was like, oh.
And getting back to the way his dad refereed games, again, not going to say whether he was for or against Celtic, but think back. He never blew for the final whistle in a major game. He walked over, picked the ball up, put it under his arm, and would then blow for the full thing. That's what he did. That's what Hugh... Look out for videos of it. That's what Hugh Dallas did in big games. It was about him. His ego was enormous. He was the centre of attention, and that was proved by the fact that he had to go and pick up... It's my ball. He went and picked up my ball, stuck it under his arm, and then would signal that the game was over. That's how he did it. What an ego.
That's showmanship. Do you know, we took him to the Scotland Sunday table 1 year for the football writers, and I think it was that year when David Taylor may have spoken for about an hour odd, so maybe I shouldn't blame him for it. But we looked across, and it was like, you know, because you put your chairs round so you're seeing right beside the stage. He'd fallen asleep, at our table. I said, why did we bring it up? He wasn't exactly life and soul. No harm to the guy, you know, and there's a lot of people talk about, oh, it's terrible, that joke. He should never have. But I've heard a lot, and I work for the Catholic Church, never forget that. I've heard a lot worse for practicing Catholics than what that joke was. It's like, it was the lack of professionalism getting involved in that. But it doesn't make you a bigot. Like, bad taste jokes. You tell bad taste, well, it seems to be the people I encounter, they don't seem to suggest that you can ever laugh about things that are important to you, but you know, plenty of people tell bad taste jokes about themselves. But it was lack of professionalism, you shouldn't be doing that as the head of the referees, but that does, it doesn't, yeah, he's a bigot. It's not the same thing.
So we won. I mean, that goal, as I said in the monopod, and as you said there, there are a few things in everyday life that are as joyous as a last-second goal, that's those circumstances.
In a cup game, especially. A cup game, especially. Because you were just thinking, I was thinking to myself, Martin's kind of mystique. We punctured by this and da-da-da, everything. You know, it's like the sheen wear off him and he'll feel it. He'll be drained because it'll be more critical. I was thinking ahead to all that. And then it all goes in a second. It's like, wow, what up, my God?
And then we go straight up and score the second goal. And I say at that point, I thought,
this is three,
we'll go and score three. And they just, because they've just so deflated by that goal, we'll go and score a third.
Actually, it disturbed me again that they didn't. They actually, Dundee, kind of got a grip again. Again, it's like, I think I was right about that. You know, I put it on our chat. I think that was the first time Neil domestically has gone behind in a game. And look how close he came to losing it.
But
equally, in these second and third spells, what a bonkers thing. And for the players as well, seeing you think about it, players have had four different managerial kind of stints.
I know.
It's got to be drained. They must be drained. They look drained.
So talking of impact on players, and you mentioned it earlier, so there was the boycott.
Yeah. I mean, anybody, that's how they feel.
Yeah.
I don't feel it. I'm not close to feeling it. I'm sorry. I know one of our subscribers said that me and you give the impression we don't understand why anybody, because this is terrible. Yeah, I can understand people feel it's terrible and all that. It's just, I have known more terrible times. I can't help that.
No, I know. And then when you do it, people go, you know, people will, but we're all the product of our circumstances and product of the life we've had before. That right now is not an existential threat to the existence of Celtic. No. Therefore, if somebody feels strongly about it and that strongly, that's fine. I'm not saying that they shouldn't. It's just for me.
You should follow your conscience. Follow your conscience.
And again, it's that thing of Celtic is one of the few, you know, got a pretty boring life. So Celtic is one of those few things that gives me that. I don't need to think about anything to do with, you know, if you run a business, genuinely, literally every waking second, a thought pops in your head to do with money in the bank. That's just the nature of it. And I mean, as I'm talking to you now, that's made me start thinking about money issues, right? The one place I never think about it is at Celtic Park. It gives you that. And there'll be lots of people, there'll be other things that are going through, that are happening in their life, that the one place where they can just go and the world doesn't exist is inside Celtic Park. And that's not to say that there are other people.
I was going to say escapism, but it's not like that, because escapism, you don't associate with something that you're so passionate about that cuts you right to the core. And I know that it would have cut all those people who boycotted right to the core. I can't be one of them, because it's just like, follow your conscience. And my conscience was absolutely clear. Like, going along and Saturday night, and the conscience of all my family was absolutely clear.
And you know, I'm quite sure, you know, if someone spoke to me and I would say, yeah, absolutely. I don't know how many times I've, you know, so we've been doing this podcast for 20 years and writing and podcasting. I don't know how many times I've written virtually the same article about player trading, about what we could do as a player trading club, about what we could do with, basically, I don't know how many times I've spoken about, I think we could be doing 25% better than we are, always. You know, this club could be a level 25% higher than it is in terms of revenues in, which means wages that can be spent, money that can be spent on the players. I wrote stuff at the beginning of the season about, I mean, okay, so, you know, property's my thing, right? So when I am and interacting with the public, dealing with the public and property, that, so when I'm at every single game at Celtic Park, I'm going in and I'm thinking about, if I ran a business that had 70-odd million pounds in the bank, I would be embarrassed of certain aspects of their structure and infrastructure.
Yeah,
and
both.
And
infrastructure.
Yeah, so
they've
again,
managed to bring up the three bells or the three wee jobbies somehow. That's the equivalent, like what they've managed to.
But the point you're making is, so I agree. Lots of things need to change, and you know, no doubt.
So do I, by the way. So do I.
Like, if the board make changes in the summer, which I would be very surprised if the board as constituted is the same board at the start of next season. Exceptionally surprised if that happens. Right? So I'm expecting change. And maybe the people who are boycotting will say, well, all well and good, you going on a podcast, but as you've just said, you've done that podcast saying that for 20 years. It took us boycotting it to make the board turn around and go, we better do something here. And maybe they're right, but for me, it's just, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I think it was, I read that comment about, we don't understand. I do understand for somebody else. But equally, I feel sometimes from the, you know, when I interact with people on the collective, the equal thing is they're not also understanding back. In this modern world, I wrote in the article about the transfer window. In the modern world, nuance seems to have gone out of fashion. The concept of, I can believe that change needs to happen and I understand why people are doing it, it's just, that's not for me, doesn't mean that I then think that they shouldn't be, that they are wholly wrong and that I am with the board. You're allowed to have a nuanced position in between.
Surely people would recognise that we've said nothing other than the governance is defunct, dysfunctional, it has to change. Do you know what I actually think? And I didn't stand up for it because I don't hate people in football. as I say, I don't know if I said it on here, but you know, it's, I hate Trump, I hate Farage, I hate Tommy Robinson, but I can't really kind of dredge myself to hate people on a Celtic board. But see, actually, I felt the Ceausescu moment was more that the widespread support, and it was hugely. I mean, my boy stood up for it and all that.
As you quite rightly said in our WhatsApp chat, it's not quite catchy to say stand up if you think the board might be nice people, but they're not very good at their job and should maybe move on. It's not really a catchy chant.
What did I say? Stand up to replace the board or something? Somebody, you know, one of you said that's not working either. That's not working either. But I didn't stand. And again, that's probably a black mark against me, you know. But I actually think that had a real impact. You could tell it. Like you thought, wow, the whole, like, well, wasn't the whole, well, clearly it wasn't, because you didn't do it either, I know, if you don't mind me saying. Like, but it really did get buy-in. And it was, it felt quite dramatic.
I actually thought, if I'm the board, that's more dangerous. You know, the last, you know, people were talking about, oh, how many empty seats and 60,000. But actually, a 5:30 on a Saturday night, when the game's live on the telly, what might the attendance have been if there'd not been a boycott?
Probably 30, was it maybe the 32, if they sold 32,000 tickets?
No, I think it might have got up to...
Or maybe people still buy tickets and don't go.
Yeah. It might have got up to... I know four people who didn't go but weren't boycotting, because they weren't going to be going prior to mention of the boycott. You know, there was other reasons why they wouldn't be going. So it's reasonable to... So maybe they could have got it up to maybe 38, 39, somewhere between 35 and 40, if there'd not been a boycott Saturday night at 5:30.
Yeah, so maybe 15, just maybe 14... 12 to 14,000 people boycotted.
I actually think in a full stadium, 75% of the crowd chanting against the board, I actually think that was...
Yeah, it felt like last week the board would know that the jig was up. But then again, we know that the person who has to make the decision that doesn't have to see this, doesn't have to feel it or experience it firsthand because he's not there.
But equally, I think there comes a point, no matter how much we think he overrides their decision making, I think there comes a point, and no matter how much again we think that they acquiesce to his and, you know, doff their cap to Uncle Dermot's decision making, I think there would come a point where they would have to say, no, this is a real problem, Dermot, and actually have to stand up and articulate what the issue is. I think they could, no matter what you think of him, I don't think they could keep going on and just saying nothing to him.
No, that's what happened, as far as we understand it. That's what happened with Nancy, wasn't it?
So, we won, the Tonetki got the second goal, and that was through. So, we've got the Livingston game, we'll come to that in a minute. Next up, that was, firstly, from a marketing perspective, who thought having the Scottish Cup draw after a game on a Sunday night that finishes after 10 o'clock. I know there was extra time, right? But it had the potential of extra time and contained it didn't contain Celtic, Rangers, Hibs or Hearts. Four of the more sexy teams in Scottish football were not involved. Who thought having the Scottish Cup draw after a Falkirk Stenhouse Muir game on BBC Scotland that finishes it after 10 o'clock at night was a good marketing idea? I mean,
it was bonkers. It was almost like they were running out of time to hold the draw.
I know. Quick.
Yeah, well, we'll be leaving you right now, but we'll be conducting the draw, and you will find out by looking on the BBC website. You know, we're getting close to that, weren't it?
So we've got Stuttgart Rangers, Aberdeen Rangers. That's the run of four games from the middle of February onwards.
Mommy, daddy. That's all I can say to that. Like, people, I saw this guy and I loved his tweet. And I wanted to believe it. He said, we're champions because we respond to periods like this. This is when it brings the best out in us. And I suppose it did, but we feel like a long way away from it. It did. If you remember, I was saying to my boy, he said, this is the first, he said, I'm loving this title race. I said, how can you love this? He says, because I don't know if they're going to win it. I said, that was the same 2 years ago. And he said, nah, I knew we were going to win that. I said, no, you couldn't have. I said, I remember it in the February. I thought, Clement's winning a treble here. He's winning a treble. Remember when Celtic lost, I think, was it lost at Motherwell?
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost at Hearts. And you thought, this isn't happening. But they did. They did step in it. They did step in it. So that's what you got to hope, that like they just cast aside. I suppose maybe it focuses the mind. Doesn't it matter what else has happened? Doesn't it matter how bad this season's been? Doesn't it matter how many games we've lost? Doesn't it matter how many managers we've worked under? We've got this month, and we've got to show the best of ourselves.
Think Stuttgart, actually, to some extent, Stuttgart doesn't matter in that run of results, in that run of games. So then it's down to Ibrox, Pittodrie, Ibrox.
Yeah, I saw a guy, another guy, a person who was ranking them in terms of importance. Ibrox in the league, Pittodrie, Ibrox in the cup, and then Stuttgart away. And I thought, can I disagree with that? That's my ranking.
Yeah. So we win at Pittodrie. And one of the games at Ibrox, we'll have 7,500 people in the Broomloan stand.
Yeah, well, that'll be fascinating.
They're already apparently having a meltdown on Follow Four because it's just occurred to them. They've got season book holders in the Broomloan stand. Well, they've got more season book holders than the ability to sell tickets. We never do that, but they have.
Right, but will the SFA definitely give Celtic that?
It's the rules. If Celtic asks for it. So the only thing would be if the police say no. But of course the issue then again is it will either have to be that section in the corner or the whole of Broomloan, because I don't think they've got the ability to...
Well, they did the 2.5 last time, didn't they?
Yeah, so it'll either be that 2.5 or it'll be the whole Broomloan, because I don't think they've got the segregation facilities to be able to do sort of anywhere between that.
No, but it doesn't wash in terms of... the police having any kind of objection to it, because it's much easier to police the whole Broomloan in terms of what the missiles and all that was been happening for across the fans.
I've been told before by people that for the police it's much easier to police 7,000 than it is to police 800.
Yeah, so that wouldn't wash if there's any attempt to.
Also, might get a ticket for an away game because there'll be 7,500 tickets for once.
There's no boycott for that, is there? No.
Like, no. So then we've got Livingston midweek. We're at home to Livingston.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, how's he going to play it? I saw somebody was saying about, but he can't start Oxlade-Chamberlain. Much as he wants to get him up to speed as quickly as possible, he also knows the guy's body's been pretty fragile over the years. So he has to build up his fitness, but he needs some. Building up that fitness. Celtic, I saw it the other day. Sorry, I saw it just before we come on. I didn't quite realise it. It's 9 games in 4 weeks and 3 days. Some schedule.
Yes, I'm just looking at all the fixtures that night. I wouldn't be surprised if he started him. To give him... I mean, don't forget, tomorrow night, Hearts play Hibs.
Oh, I know. I've not forgotten. And then Rangers are at Fir Park.
Yep.
My God, it could be a... See, if that Aberdeen game had gone ahead and they'd won, of course.
Yeah.
Even that, you thought, is the fates conspiring against them?
Equally.
It's far from ideal.
Might it have been good for us to get a break?
Yeah, and also, didn't it look like it, by the way, yeah. For the 10th game of Saturday? Rangers, those two Rangers games, Rangers have 3 midweeks in those two games, and Celtic will be playing both midweeks. You have to think now that what they do have, through the transfer window, whatever way you've got there, they do have the numbers now.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you saw. We made 7 changes on Saturday.
And it didn't make them any worse because they weren't great to start.
No, but and that was without Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think against a home game against Livingston, what's the point in signing him if you think he needs training with Celtic for 3-4 weeks before you can play him? You win this. There's no point in signing him if you're not going to play him.
He has been training
every week.
He obviously looked good at training at Arsenal because Arteta started to make noises about a short-term deal himself.
So, for me, you play him against Livingston for 60 minutes.
Might not be a bad idea.
You start... I mean, there's obviously two options. You start him, play him for 60 and then take him off or something like that, or you plan to bring him on for the last half hour. The challenge of planning and bringing him on for the last half hour is What if the game's not? What if it's nil nil?
Yeah, no. You're
then, then you've got a chance of bringing on a guy that you're testing.
It's a good idea to start him. Who starts up front? Is it Chavanchara or is it Adame?
I actually thought Adame looked quite robust and physical.
He did.
More physical than Chavanchara.
Yeah.
Who I noticed Martin O'Neill made the point. I said to you last week, there was something about the way he moved that reminded me of Chris Sutton. And you said his header was Sutton-esque. But just the way he lets himself get, the way he sort of lies on the defender, as if, oh, he's pulling me left, right, and centre here. No. You're lying on him. Prostrate, even not prostate. There's something about that. I don't know. I actually don't know. Maybe that's the. And Mbuka, he played 45 minutes and he'd just come, you know, give him time.
Does he play again then, do you think?
I'd play Mbuka again on the right. And if Maeda's fit, I'd play Maeda on the left, Mbuka on the right. I don't know which one, Chavanchara or Adamu through the middle. And I'd start the game with Oxley, Chamberlain, Engels and Callum McGregor. I think that three would be a much more robust. That would be the three that I'd be wanting to build up to be playing Rangers, Aberdeen, Rangers.
I see some people were making a call for Arthur as well, but he wouldn't do that. He'll not break up the fabulous trusty Scales centre defensive partnership.
I believe Arthur is the Brentford Bobo Baldy, somebody described him to me.
Do for me. That would do for me, man.
Which is why Martin likes him, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'd also seen him as the Brentford Virgil van Dijk. I saw that earlier today as well.
Well, either one of them.
You can't be both of those. You can't
No, one can play football and one can't.
Have you not gone to both sides of the spectrum there? Acid and alkaline, the pH there has gone from 1 to 14 or whatever, is it not? Was it 14 on a pH scale?
My son's not doing chemistry, so I've not had to try and dredge the memory to try and do that. Fortunate, one of the topics he's doing is music, so that's great.
Right.
Although the theme tune to Star Wars is now playing endlessly in my head, because that's one of his...
Learning on an instrument of some variety.
Piano, theme tune to Star Wars and the piano. Blackbird, the Beatles' Blackbird, is what he's doing on the guitar. And yesterday, I think, Blackbird and yesterday he's doing on the guitar. Theme tune to Star Wars and some bluesy thing are the two pieces.
My boy,
anyway,
doesn't let me help him with his homework of any variety because he says I shout at him.
Well, you see, me and his mum, I'm the calm one. People may not believe that. I'm the calm one, so I get sent in.
See, likewise with my wife. The red idea of the homework.
Yeah, so I'm also the one who's going to teach him how to drive because I'm completely zen in a car for some reason and his mum is not, so.
Wow, Corin was saying that to me because he's just turned 16. Are you allowed to get a provisional at 16?
No, 17.
Is it 17, right? I might have a car by then because my car died after 20 years. So it's sitting outside there. I can't even get it started to get it to the scrappy. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Get Harry H. Corbett round. Get it on. And he'll give you a balloon for your car.
As long as I get it in the stick.
Yes. Anyway, what's your prediction for the Livingston game?
Oh, surely. I have to see. They might get a 3-1. I'm going to go for 3-1.
They'll score.
Yeah, that will be one of those silly things. Celtic will be 3 up. And they'll score some kind of consolation.
To all the conceding goals. At Rebel on Twitter, if it genuinely was him and he wasn't just making up, you would have known I was doing my dinger at the end of the Dundee game. Salo, we got a goal kick.
No.
The Salo does that thing of runs to get the ball, puts it down. It's like 119 and a half minutes or something like that. He runs to get the ball, puts it down, takes a quick goal kick.
I know.
He also did one at round about 116. Where he does that, runs, gets the ball, takes a quick free kick. And he plays it to McCowan, who's got three Dundee players on him, who McCowan decides he's going to do a 180 turn and play through them.
It was Anton Rogan against Partizan Belgrade.
Is it in Belgrade?
Sorry, my boy, talking to our kids, he's just back for his training, so he'll be going nuts, like, because he can't take keys, you know, when he's just running down for the training pitch.
Right,
so
I better let you go.
Aye, aye.
Right, I better let you go. So, enough. Anyway, we're going to win 3-1. That's great.
That's 3-1, that, yeah. And it'll be interesting, 2-0 on Sunday, if we're even talking about that. Kamala,
right, magic. Pitch. Right, okay, all right. Cheers.
Right, go, boys.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.